Herbert Burnett, Reel 5.
And as I said, 1937, we got this increase of pay, so the chaps had a little bit more money in the pocket, so then you could get one servant, you see. But that one, I'd probably look after about a dozen of them, the same. And you paid him 1 rupee a week, 1 and 6, you see. And for that, he came in the morning, he cleaned your boots, clean your boats, your equipment, weapon, you see, and that, and took your washing, got your washing, Dolby, I took it away, and then he'd tidy your bed up. And then if you was on guard the next day, he would take your guard kit away for you, you see. Because you had a different set of leather working up the guard. Then at the night time, then you wouldn't see him no more then, you see, till the night time. Then you'd come back at night, he'd fetch your guard kit back, he'd fetch your washing back, all done, ironed and everything, you see, all done. And generally fuss around, you know. He kept you clean, he kept you tidy, you see. And all that for 1 or 6 a week. But when you got about, as I say, about looking after about 12 people, you see, well, he was getting 18 rupees, 12 rupees, you see, so he was getting nearly £1, wasn't he, or more, and he was well off. In them days, he was better off than what we was, you see. Well, it's right, isn't it? But to us, it was a good help, it was all right, and it'd give you a little bit of prestige, like that you had got somebody looking after you. Yeah. Of course, when I went back in the war time, then I was a sergeant then for just a short period of time. Then I got made a quarter block. Then I got made sergeant major. Well, then you could afford a little bit more, and you got a bit more service from them. They never left you anyhow. You know, it was quite good then. It's all right. Until they sent us into the jungle to help to finish the war off. Yeah, it was all right. Quite good.
How did you choose your servant?
I think a lot of them had been looking after the British Army for years. And they live near the cantonment. That's the name I'm trying to think of. Cantonment, yeah. And they live near the cantonment, you see, within it. And they looked at, they always had a pocket full of references from various people who looked after them, do you see, and all sorts. And there used to be some funny references when you read them all, you know, some funny ones, like, you know, real comical, but they didn't know they was comical. And that. And you used to have a little laugh now. You mean very good and all this sort of stuff. But on the whole, there was honest and there was good fellows. Yeah.
Was there any preference for Mohammedans or Hindus?
That I never took much note of. To me, he was a human being, and he was willing to accept my money to look after my gear. And that I don't care with Chinese, Japanese, or what. That was it. Yeah. When we went from the clothing that we was issued in England with, that's for English. Doing our khaki and whatever, our great coat and our SD cap, what you call service dress cap. All those things you took with you when you went abroad. You see, all of them. Complete. And as I said again, you've got an initial issue of tropical clothing to last you till you got to yon side. When you got to yon side, you got your full issue of tropical winds, khaki drill, about 3 suits, and different type, you know. You got another topi, you got a pith helmet and a topi, 2 hats. You had your shorts, khaki drill shorts, and you had khaki drill long trousers for night time. You had Angola shirt, ordinary khaki shirt, and you had a khaki drill shirt, you see, because night time, even though it was warm today, it did come fairly cool at night, especially if it was on night guard, so you had khaki. And for leisure, not issued, but you could buy white trousers and a white shirt, you see. But you never wore civilians. An English swaddy, sergeants, below the rank of sergeants, never wore civilian clothes in India, not for a lot of years, until about 1937, when they brought it out that a soldier, provided he could afford them, could buy civilian clothes and wear them. So right up to, I'm sure it was 1937, all through the ages, ranks below sergeants never was allowed to wear civilian clothing. You could wear these white trousers and a white shirt, do you see, which was like civilian clothing, but it wasn't because everybody wore them, so therefore it was a uniform, wasn't it? You know, everybody wore them. But once they give this instruction, as I say, in 1937, when they brought a ruling out that you could wear blazers and flannels, see, well, everybody went crackers because they never had them on before, you see. So the regimental tailor, and that was kept very busy because immediately he got in on the doings and was making them, made some good things and all, and it was reasonable. You know, you could make your own style and your own pattern and your own material. And there wasn't deer, they were very reasonable. I can't remember what there was, but they had to be to keep within our wages, you know. But that was the only time that we ever wore civilian clothes from 1937 onwards.
Did people mind not being able to wear
it? I think they got used to it. I think it was just one of those things that never happened. So they just lived with it, and it was part and parcel of the routine.
Where did you get the white shorts and the white...
You could either buy them from the bazaar or you could buy them from the regimental tailor. But it was better to buy them from the bazaar. See, if you bought them from the regimental tailor, in most cases you got better quality stuff. He had to sell good stuff and he had to be proficient, otherwise he wanted the regimental tailor, didn't get the contract, you see. But he charged a bit more. But if you went the right way about it down the Indian bazaar, which there was always one in the area, all catered for the troops as well, and you got around, you found what you wanted, do you see, at a reasonable price, much cheaper than what the tailor, see. It wasn't a set pattern of trousers and shirt you wear. You could wear what sort you wanted, but it had to be white shirt and white trousers, you see. And as I say, you could probably pay 3 rupees for a pair of trousers from the regimental. And if you went down to the bazaar, you'd probably go for 2 rupees. You see, just as good. But as I say, the civilian clothes, well, that was out. Nobody bothered with them. But once the lemon come in, and then everybody thought, I've got some silly 40 upstairs, and maybe with my first blazer on. When they're allowed to, I don't show you because you look flipping comedian. plenty of sport. You could either, the main sport was football and hockey. There was swimming. Each unit had its own plunge bath. We called them a plunge bath because it wasn't awful big, you know, but you could stop as long as you like in your leisure time. Rugby and boxing. You could take part in any of those sports, and if you was one that took part in lots of sports, you was a keen sportsman, you was in. You see, like old Charlie Potter and company, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I myself played hockey and a bit of football. So.
Was there more time for sport?
Oh, yes.
Than had been in England?
Wednesday afternoon was sports afternoon. Thursday was Victoria's Day. Wednesday afternoon was sports day. But every night you could play. Once, I mean, you see, in the summertime, on the plains, your day started about 4 o'clock in the morning. Your values go up 4. You was up at, breakfast by 5 o'clock in the morning. And if you was on the, if it was the time of the year when you was firing your course, your rifle, you was on the range, do you see? But to get the other side of the story, you was off the range by 9 in the morning, you see. They only had some tea ready for you. And off the range, you cleaned all your weapons, you cleaned yourself up on your gear, and you was finished for the day. See, that was on the plains. Because it was too hot, see, the sun was up. And so you got all your work done, early hours of the morning, till about 9, shall I say 10 o'clock at the latest, and that was it for the day. So you had the rest of the day, either, you know, whatever. Sports, I don't know, whatever you want to do, it's there. Or you could lounge and lay around and get yourself a book or something at the library, and that was it. That was in the summertime.
And in the winter?
In the winter was similar, but the only thing is you finished later. Your reveille was about 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, and you was on parade by about 8:30. You finished probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That was the only difference.
Who did you used to play hockey or football against? Who were the
ourselves, men? Into platoon, into company, or the local native regiment, you know, or the local artillery, or the, you know, competition. But if you were good at it, then you got in the battalion team. So you went, travelled a little bit, and played battalion standard, which I never got to. No, I was right. I was company standard, you know, into platoon and things like that. Yeah.
Did British civilians take much notice of soldiers? Did they invite them to their
homes? I don't think the civilians had much time for the service people themselves. Now, in a little place like Dinapore, they had, because it was a very small community of Europeans, civilians, and they had an infantry regiment nearby them, and it was a big community of natives, do you see? So therefore, the small community of Europeans gave more to the army. All right. But where he was in a big place and all like that, as far as the civilians was concerned, I think the troops was shoved in the background only when something had to be done. Yeah, I think nearly everybody will say that. I think there's we didn't use to give much at all for the civilians, especially the English civilians as well.
Did you notice much difference in how Indians treated soldiers, whether they were country folk or townspeople or city people?
I don't think they bothered a great deal, love. No, I don't think they bothered a great deal. You had your village people. You see, where you were stationed, you never really went through a town as soldiers, like marching or training. It was always away from the towns towards the villages, you see. And I think they were more scared than anything else, really. I don't know what scared of what, but they appeared to be more scared than anything else of coming out while he was sort of marching on the road. I think that's about all about that. I mean, in the towns, I think you could get into it if you wanted to. I think you could get yourself into a tight scrape now and again if you... wanted to go out and cause trouble, which you can rest assured that there's possibly one or two did do, especially if they went out and had a couple of pints, you know, and went in the villages, which part of them they wasn't in bounds, probably got themselves knocked about a bit, and it has happened. But taken by and large, the idea was to ignore them. That was it. And just get on with your own job. Those that were sociable, well, be sociable with them. And those it wasn't, just turn your back on them, and that's it.
Were you ever told much about Indian politics?
No, and we didn't want to know nothing about them, love. No.
Did you get any leave while you were in India?
I had 1 fortnight all the time I was abroad. 2 fortnights, I'm sorry. We went to 1 year... 1 year when I was at that hill station, I talked about Chakrata. We had a break from trading, and me and a chap went to Missouri, which is, you could see from Chakrata across the hills, but you had to go down and away and up a day and a night trip. You could see it across there. Went there for a fortnight, but you had to save, you know, if you was going to go on leave, you had to mention it now for next Christmas. Do you see? Because you had to save your money and that. And then when Christmas came, you had a little bit of money together and off you went. Yes, it was quite good. It was all right, it was leaves. Same again, the British Swaddy was restricted, really, in what he could do. You see, there's so many places out of bounds and things like that, you know. And there was all the military policemen at the towns, you see. And I'm not saying that they tag you all along the line, but there was there... And there was always somebody willing to say to a policeman, soldiers down here, do you see? And doing. But there was the areas that you was all right, and there's plenty of entertainment in those areas. And the last time, the second chap, no, during the in peacetime India, I only did go on holiday once. That's the one. But in the wartime, we had a break and I had a fortnight. That's when I sent that tablecloth, remember, from Outrecommand. You've heard of Outrecommand, have you, on the top there? From, we was at Mysore. No. We was near Mysore on jungle training, you know. And we had a week's break, I think. They gave everybody a chance to have a week's holiday, a week or a fortnight, I can't remember which, because they did so much training and they knew the troops were getting stale and burned off. So they gave them all a chance and they had to sort of leapfrog each other, you see. And I spent my fortnight in Outrecommand and that was very good. That was very champion, that, lovely. And of course we had a bit more money because I was a sergeant then, you see. And so I had a bit more money and enjoyed it. Quite good. And then that was the last leave I had before I come home for good.
Were you encouraged to learn any Indian languages at all?
Oh, yeah, I went on a course. I went on a short course at Rasmak. Me and two or three more lads. And we had this interpreter, what do you call them? You have a name, haven't they?
A Munshi.
Munshi, isn't it? Munshi, that's right. He was our instructor. Went for about 3 months, I think, while I was up there, about once or twice a week. Hey, I enjoyed that. It was all right, you know. Warlik Titar and Woo Ha Ha, Tamara Namkai and what have you. Yes, very good.
And could you choose to go to those?
Oh, it's quite voluntary, yeah. But once you said you were going to go, you couldn't waste the time. Right? You'd say, oh, I'd like to go at that. So I never got that. You weren't compelled. And it's only a shortage of time. See, I forget now when they actually started this Hindustani course. I know it was at Rasmak, but I think it was towards the end of our tour, do you see? And we didn't get the full course in. But if you'd have got the full course and passed the examination, then you got efficiency, basically increase in pay, you see, and you got a little bit better jobs because you could speak a bit of Hindustani, Urdu, and said that, you see. But what we'd learn, we could, being signallers, you see, when we used to go signalling across to the Gurkhas across there, we could send it in Urdu, you see, and they would send it back. So that was all practice to bring us out. Oh, yes, all right.
Did you ever expect British rule would end as soon as it did?
No. We never thought of anything at all like that. We never give it a thought. I think during the war, when they had these Gandhi uprisings and things like that, I think something was afoot at that time, which the war halted a little bit, you know, it delayed us a little bit. But in peacetime, no. But in wartime, I think the feelings might have been going round then, you see, at that time. And I think hence the reason why they had more riots and things. But I always say this, it was Ackley who gave India away. You see, he started the rot, giving the empire away.